Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello and welcome to Musicals with Cheese in our very special Sondheim tribute episode. I'm joined, as I usually am when I talk about Sondheim, by Emily Clark of Stealing Focus and the incredible Christy Esterly of Musical Hell. Thank you guys for being here such an important occasion.
Yeah. It's a time right now for, you know, theater people to really hold each other close. So
yeah.
Yeah.
It's a collective mourning.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it feels like it's been that way for a while, because I was with you guys when Terrence McNally died. We had just finished recording something when Hal Prince died, too. So I feel like when we lose our greats, I think of being around you guys, and it makes me feel better, to be honest.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is, I mean, look, he was 91. I it's so funny when I think about, he's been like quote unquote old my whole life, you know?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
And every year I've been like, okay, you know, I've thought about this before. Like, what'll I do when Sondheim dies? I really have. And he, you know, 91 years with Hal Prince gone, he's really one of the last who has that direct connection to the golden age of Broadway. You know, one of, I think he was the last creative still standing from West Side Story. Is Arthur Lawrence still alive? I don't remember.
No, he's dead.
Okay. So I think he was the last one. So it feels like, I don't know, the end of an era, but an era that transcended multiple generations.
Right.
It's crazy to think about. And
yeah,
everyone keeps saying it's like Shakespeare dying, and it really is the closest parallel I can think of.
Honestly, yeah. I mean, you know, when a very talented person dies, you know, legend and genius and all those words get thrown around so much, but it's no hyperbole in this case. He was legendary. He was a genius. He did what nobody else could do or has done. You know, maybe Lin-Manuel Miranda in 50 years of his career trajectory is right, might be on that level, but no one else even comes close.
Yeah, and the recognition even from people that aren't in the world is palpable. Like Andrew, I texted him about it. He's like, that bums me the hell out, because no one has ever been as good as he was.
Right.
No, and the you know, he was mentored by Oscar Hammerstein, which is something incredibly special. And then he himself, you know, you think that, you know, he passed that on to so many composers. Obviously, Larson was a huge one. But I think you're right. Like, Lin really could be the next evolution of that great Broadway lyricist. God, he was a teacher forever. Like, I mean, to be mentored by one of the greats and then mentored again in your earliest days on Broadway, and then to just spend the 70s and a lot of the 80s writing the seminal classics of American musical theater, like bar none, mm-hmm. like that will be taught, like Shakespeare, that will be taught for generations to come. It's monumental.
It's absolutely uncomparable, too. I was thinking about this earlier today. What would the world of Broadway look like, especially in the 80s and 90s, without Sondheim and his work? Because a lot of creatives in that world were dying off because of the AIDS, and there was like even some years where there was barely any contestants for best musical to even be
right.
able to win.
Yeah.
So there what was... would the theater look like without his work in those times?
It's so fascinating because you think about like what were his big 80s musicals. It was Merrily, Sunday, and mm-hmm. Into the Woods.
Into the Woods, yeah.
Yeah, and Merrily effectively, you know, killed the Hal Prince-Sondheim partnership, but mm-hmm. it is a cult classic, you know.
It's probably it's probably the most successful flop ever.
It works so much better in a small space with a more intimate cast, so I'm glad it's had that afterlife.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, we talked about this in the Lacage episode, Jess, you know, because Lacage and Sunday came out the same year, and
yes.
I think they're both really vitally important musicals for their, not just for their time, but just mm-hmm. in general. However, you know, there's a reason why Sunday won the Pulitzer in addition to, Sunday won a few awards. Maybe it didn't win that many that season and, you know, notoriously mm-hmm. lost best score to Lacage. Mm-hmm. And I love Lacage, but...
Yeah,
I'll never let that go.
No, nor should you. Sunday is just on. You know, everything he did was like on the next level. The way he did A Little Night Music completely in Waltz time. The way, you know, Sunday has that impressionistic
it's pointillism.
Quality.
It's all pointillism.
For pointillism, you know, Into the Woods is kind of, you know, the dark, a dark Disney with that dark edge.
And Into the Woods was so special because of that PBS Pro Shot.
Oh, yes.
And, you know, in 2014, I went to that Into the Woods reunion. They had it in Segerstrom mm-hmm. out in the OC. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the original cast was there. Sondheim was there. So, you know, I got to hear him talk and hear Chip and Joanna and, you know, all mm-hmm. the cast. It was really wonderful. But they talked about how formative that PBS Pro Shot was. Like, the whole reason why they were able to do this big reunion that, like, sold out two straight days.
Right.
You know? And that Bernadette Peters showed up for. By the way, Bernadette Peters was there. Like, it was because we all grew up watching that. Like, I was watching that when I was, like, five. Like, before mm-hmm. I had any concept of Sondheim or really. It was
right.
just mm-hmm. one of my formative musicals. And then as I got older, I appreciated it more and more.
Right.
And then my mom could give me the Sunday Pro Shot. And then once mm-hmm. I got into high school, that became my obsession. So
yeah.
being able to see those great performances on stage meant so much. And of course, you know, there's the Sweeney mm-hmm. Pro Shot, which
oh,
I
yeah.
forget about it.
There's several so Sweeney Pro Shots.
So. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's a good segue into my first question that I know I wanted to go into, which is what was your first Sondheim? What was your first Sondheim musical? Was it Into the Woods for Emily?
Yeah, mine was Woods. I mean, my house was musical theater all the time. My dad died in 2020, and my brother and I were packing away his stuff. He left. He was a pack rat. He didn't throw away anything. And I found he went to grad school kind of late in life, like I did, like I'm doing right now. And I found like a big college essay he had written about Sondheim, like how I would do, like how I have done. And he just was always there. My parents revered him. You know, my mom is in mourning just like I am right now. Mm-hmm. So I don't really remember a time when his music wasn't just always ever present.
Okay. What about you, Christy? What was your first song?
It was again, the Into the Woods Pro Shot. I was a little older and, you know, unlike Emily, I didn't have that theater background. You know, it wasn't something that was... you know, inert in me. So I think I came at Sondheim the way a lot of people came at it, and that he wasn't my gateway composer, but he was kind of at that point where I was like, okay, yeah, musicals are kind of fun, to, oh my God, musicals are the most amazing thing ever. So Into the Woods obviously wasn't the first show I saw by a long shot, but it is the first show that I think I really thought about what it was trying to say and made me, you know, consider, you know, how it talked about consequences and how we deal with crisis. And you know, the importance of, you know, sticking together and community. So, yeah, that was, you know, and the music is catchy as hell. The people who say that Sondheim, you know, has no hummable melodies didn't hear me, you know, singing Into the Woods around the house, you know, all the time. So, yeah.
I love that, that he doesn't write for the money note. He writes for the character. And so whatever makes sense for the character is what
Send in the Clowns. It's such a simple, you know, simple piece with a small range, simple melody, and it is one of the most gorgeous things ever written.
There's a reason why it's his, like, most covered song.
And then it's followed up by, like, one of the most complex lyrically developed songs ever in the Miller Son, which is... next to each other.
Yeah. Like,
yeah. I got to sing that. I did a reading of A Little Night Music. It was like a staged reading, pretty much. And that was so much fun. That was at the age where I was Petra. Now I'm moving more into like the Charlotte age.
Yeah.
It'll be in Desiree land. It's the great thing about A Little Night Music.
That's the great thing about Sondheim is that he actually did write for mature women and wrote fantastic roles. I mean, we've got Mrs. Lovett, we've got Joanna, we've got you know, Mama Rose, who he wrote lyrics for. I mean, you know, nobody else is doing that. I mean, the curse of the entertainment industry. Once you're over 30 as a woman, you're, you know, everybody thinks you're history, but you know, Sondheim's there for you.
What about you, Jess? What was your gateway?
This wasn't my gateway, but it was the first Sondheim that I saw. I was in a bunch of performing arts things, and we performed a lot of songs for Gypsy, so we watched the Bette Midler Gypsy.
That's a great one.
And I didn't love it because I was six or whatever. Really get the nuances of strip culture versus vaudeville at the time. But then the Tim Burton Sweeney Todd movie, the advertising was all over, and I was like, that looks interesting. Instead of going to see that in a theater, I'm going to look up this George Hearn Patti LuPone concert version.
Smart
and
move.
I loved it. I absolutely loved it. And while I did like the Tim Burton film, it was nothing compared to that.
It's the thing about the Tim Burton film is that it's, you know, about half the quality of the stage version, but because it's Sondheim, that's still... you know, more quality than a lot of movies have to go on.
Yeah, but I still think it rises above something like the Disney Into the Woods because it's doing something of its own world, and it feels theatrical in the way that I think a musical should.
Yes.
It works a lot better than most movie musicals, a lot of what it cuts.
The way they did Epiphany in that was very well done. I'm like, yes, this is what you need to do for this song that it, on stage is directed at the audience. That's how you transition it to film and make it work.
I feel like it's hard when you hear Johnny Depp right after hearing George Hearn do Epiphany, though.
Epiphany. Johnny Depp is not, you know, he did okay, but he's not on the same level as George Hearn or Michael Cerveris or Hugh Pinero, so...
Or Len Cariou. Len Cariou probably does my favorite
or
Epiphany.
Or Brian Stokes-Mitchell, I saw him.
Oh,
he did it at the Kennedy Center.
Yeah.
Norm Lewis's Epiphany is also very good if you can find a place to listen to that. that's a great production. But then it led to all the other things. The only Sondheim I've ever performed was Into the Woods. And I also directed it because I had to step in to be the Rapunzel's Prince because we didn't have enough gentlemen. So
Prince is a really fun part though because you don't have to do a lot of the heavy lifting, but you still get some really good. You get the best songs, and you get some good laughs. Yeah.
Yeah. Rapunzel. What a strange name.
Yeah.
It is a great role, and I had a lot of fun with it. But Sondheim has just always been there in my childhood and everything. The first thing I ever performed publicly was "Together Wherever We Go." Like it is ingrained in everyone, I believe.
Yeah.
Like even the people that don't know it, they've heard these songs and they're integrated into their lives. It's strange that he's never written any like Christmas music in the way that like My Favorite Things was co-opted into like all that. And we need a little Christmas.
Maybe we can find one that could be adapted or something.
There has to be one, right?
Remember.
I remember from Evening Primrose. You could call that.
Oh,
that sounds Christmassy.
Yeah.
All right. So, what do you guys think is your favorite Sondheim song, like individual song? Because it's kind of really difficult. I think that's an easier question than favorite show, because the favorite show is a little bit more like...
I don't know if I could do a
favorite
song.
I mean... Because
I have like a
I'm not sure I can do favorite song. I mean, there's so many. Let's see. Well, the one that I love to perform most is Worst Pies in London. Because that is such a great character piece. It's such a great introduction to Mrs. Lovett. And, you know, it's... Even though this is, like, you know, well before they decide to get into the whole murder and cannibalism thing, you know, you kind of get an idea of the kind of woman who would actually do that. And it's a funny song. I love it. But, oh, God, Now, Later, Soon, that trio from Little Night Music, I think that's just poetry on every level. It's amazing.
Soon, I promise.
When is later?
Soon,
later.
I won't
Henrik, later. Ever here is. Yes, we know Henrik. Oh, Henrik, everyone agrees. Henrik, please, Henrik.
Soon,
now, later.
I want to.
When is later? Soon, or you ever here is.
Soon,
later.
Like, oh God, there's so many good songs in every single show. And I love them all for different reasons. I really love, obviously I love anything where he's got like all the characters pattering at the same time. So like Getting Married Today is one of my favorites. And I've been performing that since high school. So, you know, it's just, I love it.
Today is for
go, Kenzie, go, look, you know, I adore you all, but why must we die like Eliza on the ice? But perhaps I'll collapse in the apse right before you all, so take back the cake, burn the shoes and boil the rice.
I didn't want to have to tell you, but I may be coming down with hepatitis and I think I'm going to faint. So if you want to see me faint, I'll do it happily, but wouldn't it be funnier to go and watch a funeral? So thank you for the 27 dinner plates, the 37 butter knives, the 47 paper plates, the 57 candles.
One more thing.
I'm not getting married.
Not
till I'm not getting married.
With this ring.
But I'm not getting married.
I think when.
I'm not getting married. That's great, but I'm not getting married.
God. Move on from Sunday. I watched Sunday last night, and it was one of those things where Mandy Patinkin singing and The Life Moving On always makes me cry. Like, it's just one of those, like, trigger things, like, like the quintet in West Side Story. There's just things that make me cry in musical theater without any context. And last night I watched it, and it was like I couldn't look at the screen because I was crying so hard. It was one of those.
And the way you catch the light, and the care, and the feeling, and the life moving on.
We've always belonged together.
Who
anything you do, let it come from you. Then it will be new. Give us more to see.
And then what was so cool is right after I watched Tick, Tick, Boom for the 9,000th time, but watching Sunday right before it just made all of, there's so many more parallels than I kind of thought. There's literally a moment where she goes, I thought you could tell me not to go. Yeah. And then even Louise and George, there's only one Jonathan Larson. There were just moments like that where I was like, wow, this is really, boy, oh boy, these are great companion pieces. Like, Larson knew what he was doing. Lynn knew what he was doing. Like, and obviously Sondheim gave his blessing on all of it.
Right.
And then, of course, we got to the voicemail and I got choked up again.
Oh, we were not well. So I saw Hadestown last night, the touring production
in
Detroit.
Did you see my friend Jamari?
Yes.
Okay.
It was absolutely incredible. Incredible production. Very, it felt smaller, but in a good way. But I went to a very fancy restaurant beforehand, you know, like one of the ones where they play piano. And I walk in, and they're playing Send in the Clowns. And I was already not in the best space. And they played Sondheim all night, which was both the most incredible thing and broke my heart in a way. Because I was just like, I need to forget for a bit. Yeah. And I was not able to forget at all for the rest of the night.
Yeah, my sister-in-law and her family, you know, was in town for Thanksgiving, and so we were like walking our dogs, and I was just kind of, you know, we're all just having a good old time, and I just looked at my phone, and then my energy just completely, just completely shifted.
Steve and I were watching, I think we were watching Wheel of Time, actually, and, you know, I was like, my phone's going crazy, and I didn't check it, and then I saw, you know, because, you know, I've got some news push notifications like NPR and stuff, but they're kind of like really terrible when it comes to actual musical stuff that's actually important. So the first thing I saw was Jess's Twitter message saying, how are you guys thinking of you guys right now? And I was like, I just knew, oh my God, somebody's dead. Oh my God, Sondheim's dead. And I went back to my feed and I was like, yep.
Yeah, I was on my phone looking, and literally within like 30 seconds of me looking, I had two of my good friends text me like right away, and I was like, oh boy, I'm glad I was already on my phone looking at that, because that would have been a little jarring.
Yeah, Twitter has been interesting for the past 24 hours. You know, especially if you follow a lot of theater people, it's been kind of an ongoing funeral. So
I just made like a Facebook event for like a bunch of my theater friends to come over tomorrow, and I was like, no pressure, it's Thanksgiving weekend, but like, if you guys just want to come by and we could just listen to Sondheim. Because I think a lot of us want to do that right now.
It is weird how it kind of brings people together. So my high school best friend, who I have not spoken to in very many years for many reasons, not worth going into, messaged me with the like little image. He's like, I am definitely thinking about you today, because I was an annoying theater kid in high school where literally, instead of saying like, God damn it, I said Sondheim damn it. Like, that was that kid.
No, I was the same way. I was the Sondheim girl. Like, I think just like one of my friends from Sacred Fools just like, I don't know, commented on my stuff. And he was like, I think we all were thinking of you, Emily. He's like, don't worry. Like, it's cool. And I was like, okay, thanks.
So on this day, let's talk about the things that people aren't talking about. Everyone's going to be talking about West Side Story, the Gypsies. What do you think are some of the most underrated pieces by Sondheim?
All of Dick Tracy.
Oh my goodness.
I just watched that for the first time 2 days ago, because I'm working on a big Sondheim retrospective, and that this music in that movie is incredible.
It's wonderful. Yeah. Live Alone and Like It, Sooner or Later, More, so many good ones. I love it. I love the Dick Tracy soundtrack.
Mm-hmm. Have either of you seen The Last of Sheila?
I'm actually going to see that in a few days. My friend Janelle is like, we're going to watch it. So she said it's really good. So I haven't seen it, so I'm excited to watch it.
Mm-hmm. Once again, for the Sondheim retrospective, watch it. Incredible. One of the best like murder mysteries, like, especially after Knives Out really deconstructed it. It feels very much in that vein. It's been very, very good. What about the 7% Solution, where Sondheim wrote a random song for a Sherlock Holmes movie starring Alan Arkin as Sherlock Holmes?
I really like, oh God, what was I thinking of? Oh, I like The Evening Primrose, the four songs in Evening Primrose. Mm-hmm. I think they're all really good songs. I used to be really, really obsessed with the original off-Broadway recording of Putting It Together, the one with Julie Andrews. that one has some good stuff. And Rachel York. Who I love. I'm trying to think what else. Oh, I love the cut songs that they use in The Birdcage.
Like, yes.
Oh, yes.
Like, yeah, Can That Boy Foxtrot?
Yeah. There's the scene where Christine Baranski and Robin Williams are singing Love's in the Air.
What about the song Sondheim wrote for The Birdcage that is sung for like 5 seconds when Nathan Lane is rehearsing, you know, like try
a
more gum
is
scene.
This dream I see that thing.
Yes.
Oh, the one in the Fosse scene, yeah.
Yes. Sondheim wrote that.
Bubble with his gum while I'm singing. You can't do that while I'm singing.
I don't get it. Try more gum.
Try more gum.
That's a fantastic scene. I mean, yeah.
So good.
But yeah,
I mean, it's so high quality that Sondheim, when he gets to the Birdcage section of finishing the hat, he's like, if you haven't seen The Birdcage, you should see The Birdcage. There's nothing more I can add to describe what The Birdcage is. Go see it.
He just is like genuinely like seemed like a very humble and humble person. Like I love how many stories there are of people who just have a letter from him.
Yeah.
Like he just always did that.
He was a genius again, and as a genius, I think he was very opinionated, you know, about a lot of things. But when it came to interacting with people, you know, I've heard so many wonderful stories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like he wasn't, you know, he was critical of his peers. Like
he
could talk some shit like the rest of them. However,
he was
supportive, you know, of like, he loves small community theater, high school theater, regional theater, very supportive of all that. And he was a mentor and he was a teacher and taught master classes. And he was never cruel or mean to the students he taught. He was always encouraging in his own way.
And I mean, he did a thing with Lloyd Webber as a tribute to Cameron Mackintosh. I mean, they talk about the opposite ends of the 20th century musical spectrum there.
Sharing a birthday.
It's wild.
Since I'm doing videos on both Andrew Lloyd Webber and Stephen Sondheim, neither of them have badmouthed the other ever. Neither have said a single bad word about the other.
They've only talked very
respectfully.
Lloyd Webber's Twitter account had, you know, a nice tribute. So
yeah, if you've never read the book Sondheim and Lloyd Webber, give it a read. It's
fascinating. Yeah, it's
just
fascinating.
It's not even like, because they're not even the same. It's just kind of interesting that they share a birthday. And if Sondheim is the greatest American lyricist or musical theater writer ever, then Andrew Lloyd Webber is arguably, if not the best, the most successful musical theater writer of Britain, of the UK.
Right.
And maybe out here, too. Mm-hmm. So it is interesting just to kind of juxtapose them.
Right. Honestly, you know, Lloyd Webber was my gateway composer, so without him, I wouldn't have come to Sondheim, so.
Yeah, he's a good gateway composer, for sure.
Yeah, and I respect a lot of things that Lloyd Webber does. I throw a little shade at Sondheim because of Lloyd Webber's very, like, yeah, trans people can play whatever, I don't care. And Sondheim wouldn't even let Bobby be bisexual in the Company revival. So there are...
Yeah, I could see that, but I could also see, you know, he's always said about Company, and this, you know, take from it what you will. He's always said, if I meant to write Bobby gay, I would have written him gay. And so it might just be more like him adhering to the original vision he had. But you know what? Now, you know, he's gone, and, you know, who knows how his works will be interpreted.
Yeah, now it's going to be like Shakespeare.
I think he'd approve of that. I mean, he's like, yeah, it's yours now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What do you think will happen with Sondheim revivals now in this new world we live in?
I mean, they're going to keep happening. We've always had Sondheim revivals. And, you know, I like that. I think he would approve of them trying new stuff with them. Because otherwise, why are you just going to watch the same thing? So there's that off-Broadway Assassins right now, which I'm hearing hit or miss things about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
no pun intended.
Yeah. But I think making a bold choice, trying stuff out, I don't think he would ever really be against that.
Yeah.
Interesting. We'll get more revivals, that's for sure. We're going to get a lot more, at least in the local communities, for sure.
Which has me hoping, because I feel like that's where a lot of Sondheim's work works the best. Like, Merrily, I don't want a Merrily Broadway revival. I want more Merrily community productions. Oh, every one of those I've seen.
Merrily's
like,
so good in a black box.
Yes. Yeah. Like, I saw Emily Kotachu, who's now playing Christine, in Merrily, like, a year before she got that role. So you will see great, great people before they become even greater people in those small communities.
Yeah.
Man. So what are you guys going to be listening to for the rest of this weekend to kind of cheer up your spirits?
Well, I did Sunday last night. I'm one of the only people I know who's never been in Into the Woods. It's really weird. It's never happened. Hasn't happened yet. I know, it's really weird. I've never been in it. My husband, of course, has. He was Jack way back in the day. Mm-hmm. But just yesterday, he was like, I don't know if I've ever seen the pro shot all the way through. He's like,
oh my goodness.
I know. So I was like, okay, well.
We're
so
sitting it down right now.
We're going to do that today. And I said, you just have to be prepared because I'm going to be saying every along with it.
Yeah.
I don't know what else I'll be blasting. I think I'm gonna see how Into the Woods goes today. And then I have a lot of old records of my mom's of Sondheim musicals, so I might play some of those.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
How about you, Christy?
Well, I'm actually running through my Christmas playlist right now because I'm that person. But I'm definitely going to, you know, get some Sweeney Todd and probably Sunday in the Park with in this weekend. Definitely get a little night music because, again, I think it's just exquisite. I mean, it's every time I listen to it, you know, the poetry of the lyrics and the intricate beauty of the music, it's just...
Which do you think is the best album for night music?
I only do the original. That's just me, though.
Yeah, I'm a little partial to the revival right now, but, you know, it's one of those things, it's like it's all good.
I agree, but I love their. I hate Catherine Zeta-Jones in the revival, but Angela Lansbury is acting every scene in that revival recording, and it's so good.
90% of the Sondheim I'll listen to are the original Broadway cast recordings. I can't think of too many revivals that I listen to. There's got to be one.
Company. I think I listen to the Company revival
the
more.
The Forum revival. The Forum revival.
Yes.
Oh,
Nathan
my goodness,
Lane one.
Nathan Lane.
That's the one, that I grew up on.
I got to see that on Broadway. It was amazing. You know, I think Forum, you know, it doesn't get appreciated as much because it was an early show and it was very much in that traditional music comedy mold, but
it was very, very transitional. It's very much like in this limbo zone, that 60s weird zone of like, it was his first show by himself as a composer and lyricist. But he had all these, you know, borscht belts comedians like there, and kind of this kind of winking satire comedy. But yeah, it's an interesting show.
Yeah, he's obviously having a lot of fun with wordplay and stuff like Comedy Tonight, and Everybody Ought to Have a Maid. So yeah, it's
so many,
you know, very much
ones.
That traditional music comedy. It's not on the same level as, you know, Sunday or Company or something like that, but it is a good fun show.
Yeah, and I love it's not a perfect score by any means or show, but I used to be really partial to Anyone Can Whistle. I grew up on the concert one with Bernadette Peters and Scott Bakula. That was Madeline Kahn. Yeah, that was the one I really liked. I auditioned for my high school, for the Los Angeles County High School for the Arts, singing Anyone Can Whistle. At 15, like I knew anything about the world. but I always did that.
Yeah.
I've always, you know,
yeah,
I
get that. Yeah, it's one of those things. You know, you sing Sondheim at 15 and you think you get it, and then you sing it at 30 or 40, and then you're like, oh my God.
Yeah. Like I did Side by Side by Sondheim a few years ago, and I got to sing I'm Still Here. And, you know, Side by Side by Sondheim is not the best of the Sondheim reviews, but I had a lot of fun because every song I got was like stuff that I've been dying to do, you know, just like hilarious fun stuff. You know, Jeff and I got to sing You Must Meet My Wife. It was so fun.
Aww.
But but then I did I'm Still Here, and I'm not old enough for I'm Still Here, but there's a lot of it that I can really relate to, and just the storytelling of it.
I do want to put a little thing on that, because I brought this up in our Follies episode. I'm Still Here is about someone in their 30s talking about being here still, when we all attribute it to Elaine Stritch, who just feels older.
She always felt old.
Yeah.
In the original, she didn't do it in the concert one, I know. It was Carol Burnett who did it in the concert one. Elaine Stritch did Broadway Baby in the concert one from the 80s. But the original cast, it wasn't Elaine Stritch who did it in the original cast, was it?
I think she's just the one that made it really famous.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
But I remember reading it in a few reviews and readings of it, and it's like, that's not a song about an older woman looking back on life. That's a song about a middle-aged woman that thinks they know everything.
Yeah, I guess so. If you think about it, it was the 70s, so it was them looking back on it would have been, are you sure? Because it would have been
that's
them,
what
like,
I
in
remember
the 20s
reading
or something
that's
like that.
What I remember reading, like Sondheim wrote it for like a late 30s early 40 year old.
Well, then it's perfect like, for me.
Well, I
wish I had my sources right here. Like, listen to my Follies episode. I brought up the source there.
There you go.
No, I think that's one of those songs that we can all relate to after the past, you know, couple of years anyway, so.
Yes, and if you haven't already, please watch Emily's incredible video singing I'm Still Here about the pandemic. Yeah.
Yes, which is unfortunately still here, but.
It's still here.
I think I'm going to spend the weekend, I definitely am going to squeeze Passion in, which is
that's
no one's
favorite.
Sondheim except for me, but it's Sondheim trying to be Lloyd Webber. There's not a single one of Sondheim's show that's like that.
Yeah.
It is so gorgeous, so beautiful, so short. It's like 90 minutes, and it goes by like a breeze, and Donna Murphy is so good in that pro shot. Watch the Donna Murphy one, not the Patti LuPone one.
Oh, yeah, definitely, with Marin Mazie.
Your love will live in me.
Your love will live in me.
Your Your love will live in me.
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 But yeah, there's so many good pro shots. Like even the Merrily National Theater one, the Follies National Theater recording, and the concert one. Both of those are absolutely fantastic watches. Pacific Overtures tends to get overlooked, but
I love
Someone
Pacific
in a Tree.
Overtures. I always forget it. It's so good. Yeah, Someone in a Tree is Sondheim's favorite song he ever wrote, and
I don't blame him. Mm-hmm. It's a great song.
So many good songs. Please Hello is my like. Is the one I nerd out on the most, just the mm-hmm. way he emulates the different musical sounds of all these different nations. And then conversely, he does kind of that same thing with Assassins, which, mm-hmm. you know, I did that show 2008, and to this day, it's one of my favorite things I've ever done. It was so fun doing that show.
Mm-hmm.
God.
Man. I'm looking at his list of shows right now, and there's not a single one that I would even call, like, a middling show. like maybe the Frogs, but I still kind of like
Do
that
Do I hear
one.
Waltz, maybe?
Well, yeah. I will say that he only did lyrics for that one, so I'm going to push all that blame on Richard Rodgers.
Yeah, they didn't like each other. They didn't get along very well.
Yeah, he was not replacement Oscar at all.
Yeah. For either of them.
No, not in any way. Gypsy, incredible. West Side, never been my favorite, but yeah, give it a listen if you mm-hmm. like tonight.
West Side Story, though, like the quintet is one of the most perfect Act One finales. I think it
oh
set the
goodness.
Standard
it's,
for
you know,
the modern Act
yeah.
One finale.
I,
the idea
you know,
of the different themes coming in.
If there's anything I nerd out about music theater more than anything else, it's the everybody singing all at once at the end of the act moment, and that's like. Mm-hmm. You know, like you said, that set the standard.
It's the
I mean, we don't have
every time.
We don't have One Day More or Nonstop or anything like that without it.
Yeah, that's very true. And you know, he did. I heard he did get to hear the. I heard that he did get to see the remake. You know, before mm-hmm. he passed, and he
yeah.
approved.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really
he was
good.
Emphatically positive about it on the Colbert show, where he's like, "It's great, you guys. There's going to be a lot of surprises
well,
for
know,
you guys."
I know there are definitely some things about West Side Story that he would have wanted to do differently, like the lyrics in "I Feel Pretty." He always felt that was too sophisticated for someone who just came off a boat from Puerto Rico. So
mm-hmm.
it's interesting
to see.
Yeah,
it is a very, very interesting time for a musical theater fan. And don't forget, we had one more musical coming out after West Side Story that Sondheim at least had a slight hand in its involvement in creation, and that is the Merrily remake, mm-hmm. the
oh
Merrily
my goodness,
film adaptation.
Yes, the one they're actually doing in real time.
Yeah.
Yes.
So.
That's right.
Now, we also have that musical that he was promoting on Colbert. Was it like Blank Space or something like that? No, that's Taylor Swift's song. What was
it
the name
had
of
a
it?
Really Sondheim-y title, too.
Yeah. I feel like it's Blank Space, but I feel like that's also incorrect.
Let me look it up. Square One.
Square One. Yes. Do we still think that might happen?
Depends on how far into the process they were.
Yeah.
About 6 days before his death, there was a New York Times interview with him where they were talking about how he seemed of good spirits, walking around with a cane, but still like playing piano and all that. Mm-hmm. And they talked about it. And he's like, "Are you writing right now?" It's every day. He's like, no, I'm too big of a procrastinator. He's mm-hmm. like, "Are you done? We'll see you next year." So I will see if we ever get to see that. I mean, I would love it, but I also worry that would be another Jonathan Larson situation where we'd end up with an artist in complete work.
Right. Yeah, that's always hard when you do something posthumously because it's half completed and somebody else has to, you know, piece it together as best they can.
Yeah.
It's fascinating. His legacy is going to live on well beyond mm-hmm. any of us. Like, they will be performing this into the 2021, whatever years, mm-hmm. 100 years from now, 200 years from now, people will still be singing together wherever we go as the nukes come down. Like,
they'll be reading it in school, like Romeo and Juliet.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's just going to be part of the American, I mean, he already is part of the American cultural lexicon. It's only mm-hmm. going to grow from there.
Yeah. I'm sad. I still am sad. Like, I know 91 years old man that I didn't know. Still hurts, though.
Yeah
it is sad.
It is. But, you know, how lucky we were to, you know, have been on the planet at the same time as him and see that happen. So, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And Emily, to be able to be in the same room as him several times.
Well, you know, I grew up with this musical theater composer, Ryan Scott Oliver. You know, we mm-hmm. were childhood friends. Mm-hmm. We grew up together. And I texted him yesterday. He was like, I'm going to do a big post tomorrow. And he did a big post because he won the Richard Rodgers Award. And he got to have a dinner where he got to sit right next to Sondheim and talk to him.
Ooh.
But we were just kind of reminiscing about it. And he said, you know, he was there for so many of our formative years because mm-hmm. we were going to an arts high school. We were little musical theater kids. You know, we were getting into Sunday in the Park with George and discovering these albums. And then when we were in college, we were like, hey, you know what? Let's go to Chicago for the weekend and see Bounce. Let's go to the Kennedy Center and see the Kennedy Center celebration. And it's like some of our first like trips alone as like technical adults, like things like these formative moments, he was there, and they were for these events. The first time I ever saw him, we were in rehearsals for Fiddler on the Roof, you know, my junior year of high school, and my mom was like, hey, I'm gonna have you guys miss rehearsal, and we're gonna go see the Sweeney Todd at the Amundsen, the horrible Kelsey Grammer one. But then Sondheim out at the end. Yeah. But Sondheim came out at the end and we were screaming like it was at a concert. We were screaming mm-hmm. for him because it was the first time we'd ever seen him in person. And I just think like he's tied to my childhood, my teen years, my 20s. Obviously now, like what I do mm-hmm. with you guys is hugely influenced by me wanting to learn more about Sondheim and his history. So mm-hmm. it's not just like grieving someone I never knew. It's like grieving someone who was always there for me.
Right.
Yeah. That's a beautiful sentiment. I like you said that so beautifully, and I'm just sitting here like, I like Sweeney Todd.
No, you can't, you know, if you were in music theater in any capacity, you know, mm-hmm. you know Sondheim, you loved Sondheim, and you know you were touched by his work, even if you weren't touched by him personally, so.
Exactly. And, man, it's a real fucking bummer. It really, really did suck the soul out of a lot of us for, like, the last 12 hours, at least.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I've just been, what'd you say, Christy, grief-scrolling? I've been doing
grief
that.
Grief-scrolling, yeah. That's my new Twitter term, because that's what it's been. It's everybody, you know, talking Sondheim, sharing their memories, sharing their favorite shows, their favorite songs, and just, you know, kind of grieving as a community.
Yeah, hearing all these wonderful memories from people just across the board, from people, you know, like us who never met him, to people who mm-hmm. collaborated with him.
Yeah, worked with him.
Or like, you know, fellow artists like Neil Gaiman, who were just fans of his.
Oh my
who's
God.
Not in the musical theater world at all,
Frank
but Conniff, he just loves
who
him.
Who is one of the Mystery Science Theater mm-hmm. Original writers and casts. So he was, you know, talking about him. So
yeah. Mm-hmm. And Lynn shared, I kept wanting to see what Lynn was going to say.
Oh
because,
my God. You know,
because he's on a press tour right now for two films. So
right.
I was like, I wonder, God, that would make it really hard for me to like find that out and like go out on stage. But then he shared that email, like one of the last emails Sondheim shared with him, where he said something mm-hmm. along the lines of like, I feel like I've paid back Oscar. And I was like,
oh my God. Yeah. Yeah. And Lynn is one of those guys who, you know, at least in social media seems to wear his heart on his sleeve. So it was like, everyone's like, is he okay? Because I wanted that.
I needed to hear from him. Like,
yeah, I think
I know he's. I relate to Lynn just like I.
He is Sondheim's heir apparent. Like, as far as like theater's concerned, because who else is it? Jason Robert Brown, get out of here.
He thinks he is, but yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if he had to take a minute and you know collect his thoughts because. You know, I did. I think a lot of people did.
Mm-hmm. And I think that Lin-Manuel Miranda is the one musical theater writer to cry publicly more than Sondheim. Because they're neck and neck for who cried the most in public.
Well, like, I'll never forget this. When Lin won his first Tony, and he did that freestyle rap, and then he goes, Mr. Sondheim, I made a hat, a Latin hat at that.
Yeah,
and I remember
where there never was a hat.
Yeah, I remember thinking that was so cool. So.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
I just think that's a great metaphor, you know, just creating something just to put it out in the world where it never existed before. You know, even if it's not great or if it's not, you know, original or it's just something that comes from you. I think that's, you know, again, that's why a lot of people are, you know, latching on to Move On right now because, that's such a great message to take as his legacy. Get out there and make something, and don't worry about what people are going to say about it. Just create and be true to yourself. And now I'm going to cry. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm.
No, yeah, there's been a lot of crying past few days.
I've been latching on to whatever.
I think we're going to 24 now, but it doesn't matter.
My God.
Yeah.
I've been latching on to Children and Art, and the lyrics there were
right.
The two worthwhile things we leave behind when we die is children and art. And mm-hmm. Sondheim has left behind both, not in the biological sense, but in his mentorship and guiding of musical theater minds. And, of course, the incredible art that he's left behind.
Yeah,
his
Children is not necessarily, you know, just, you mm-hmm. know, who your genetic material brought into the world. It's who you teach
exactly.
and who you inspire.
Yeah.
On that note, we're all like on the brink of tears right now. It's really like I can't do this right now. So let's just spit a Sondheim quote and call it a day now. I'll start. The quote that I go back to all the time, it's on the bottom of my resume, it's on everything I say, is anything you do, let it come from you, then it will be new, give us more to see. Incredible right. work, Sunday Park with George is mm-hmm. incredible. Thank you. Yeah. All right, Emily, you're up next.
Oh, God. lyric, I guess. I guess I have to do Into the Woods, huh? But, well, okay, but like the finale where it's sometimes people leave you halfway through the wood, do not let it grieve you, no one leaves for good, but then segueing into careful the things you say, children will listen.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
It's, everything's connected. We, you know, we're not mm-hmm. alone, we're all in this together, but also, you know, everyone matters,
right.
everything matters. Mm.
Thank you. Thank you, Emily. Thank you for getting.
Yeah.
All right, Christy.
Oh, geez, I don't know. Yeah, I think that, you know, the whole concept of no one leaves for good it just sums it up right there, because, you know, and earlier in Move On, where she's saying, you know, there's Mama, there she is all over, you know, in everything that George did and everything she saw. I think, you know, that's kind of what we're seeing right now is, you know, there's Stephen.
There's little Stevie Sondheim.
Yeah.
Stephen Joshua Sondheim. And if I'm going to do one last recommendation for all of you guys, specifically because of Sondheim's death, one thing that I think feels the closest to him telling you his story with his music is the Sondheim on Sondheim album. I don't think that's a great review, but that album, it just feels like a mm-hmm. beautiful telling of his life through his words, through his stories, through interviews, through everything.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a great thing if you just want to feel close to him a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, play that Jonathan Larson voicemail on your phone and make it
yes.
seem like he's calling you.
Yeah.
As
him saying, be proud.
Be proud. Be proud. Yeah.
Be proud, everyone. On that note, do you guys want to promote your stuff? I'm sorry.
Yeah. I'm Emily Clark. I have a show called Stealing Focus. I have a few Sondheim-y episodes. I know now. I've had people asking me for years, like, do a history lesson on Sondheim, and I think I was waiting for something like this, so I'm sure some kind of huge retrospective research thing, I'll work on that sometime soon. But in the meantime, I have some videos talking about, like, Sunday and some other stuff, so check me out on YouTube, and I'm on Twitter and all the socials at Emily A. B. Clark.
All right, Christy, you're
all
up
right.
next.
I'm at Musical Hell pretty much everywhere. I've done a couple of videos about not so great adaptations of some great Sondheim musicals, and also Know the Score and At the Source have gone onto some deep dives into things like Sweeney and the like. So in the meantime, you know, I'm making silly videos where there weren't any before, so.
You make a lot of hats, Christy.
Yes.
And I love both of your guys' hats that you make. Your art makes me happy, and I'm so much better off because it exists. As well as you two as genuine people. You are the best of the best.
Thanks.
Out there.
Thank you, Jeff.
You know us. We're Musicals with Cheese. That's who you're listening to. We've done a lot of episodes on Sondheim. check them out. They're a lot less sincere than this, I'll tell you that. Before we all melt like snowmen in the hot sun, this has been Musicals with Cheese. Thank you for today.
Hey, go finish your hats, everybody.
Yes.
Yes. Be proud.
Yes. May his memory be a blessing.
If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah. Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org. Because only together we rise.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.